Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Season 7, episode 125. I'm Dave Bryant from SteelersDepot.com. Sitting in, as he has been all summer long, for David Todd, my co-host, is Alex Cazora. Alex, happy Monday and happy one of the, if not the slowest days of the sports calendar. Of course, today and probably, I think, Wednesday as well, too, you'll have the All-Star game sandwiched in there. But if you're a sports fan and if you don't like Wimbledon and all like that, it's you're going to have a hard time finding something to keep you entertained today.
Yeah, what are you going to do today, Dave? You're no sports on. What are you going to watch?
Yeah, look, I got to admit, my TV stays off most of the time. Alex, I mean, it really does. I mean, I'm not one of those people, too. I write bad enough as it is, and to have the distraction of a TV going or audio or anything like that, it really compounds the problem even more. So I'm used to having, you know, if there's not a game on that I'm specifically watching, I had the TV normally down very low, muted in fact, or off in general, and such is the case right now. So, you know, I won't overly miss it. I guess I will probably turn on the Home Run Derby, you know, later on tonight, but even that's half sports at that, if you will. So but regardless, yeah, the next two of the next 3 days will just be brutal. I guess the ESPYs will be on Wednesday night, I think. So if you're into that kind of thing, but this is the single worst time of the sports calendar year, if you will. Antonio Brown, it's a good day for him, though. I think he turns 29 today. Definitely a reason for him to celebrate. Getting into some other things here, today is Monday. It is July the 10th. That means there is now officially 1 week left in the Le'Veon Bell contract situation. The Steelers have until, I believe, next Monday at 4 Eastern time to get him signed to a long-term deal. No sense for us talking much more about that. We've already beat that to death several times over the course of the offseason. So we'll see what happens. You know, we got a week, hopefully this time next week, where we're talking about him getting a long-term deal. However, some probably out there listening hope the Steelers don't do such, don't consummate such a deal with him. As far as news to talk about, Alex, what is there? What would you like to start off with? You know, that we had a report earlier in the week. I think it was a USA Today writer that named Mike Mitchell one of the league's most overpaid players. I forget how many players were on that list, but I know that's kind of subjective in the broad scope of things, and people can argue how good or bad Mike Mitchell is, but to have him on the list because of his high cap number, that is just absolutely ridiculous.
It is, and I believe there were 15 players on the list. Mitchell came in at 15th place. But Dave, explain to people why the logic is faulty, because Mitchell's base salary this year is what, $5 million. His cap hit is $8.5 million because of a previous restructure. But tell people why it's wrong to use cap number as the guide.
Yeah, and you just hit on it right there. I mean, you can't use cap numbers for players because of various reasons. It's not an equal playing field across the line. For starters, as you alluded to, Mike Mitchell had his contract restructured. Year before, and in doing so, it's not like he received more money. It's not like he took a pay cut or got a raise. He just got some money paid out a little bit differently. to him, and, mm-hmm. and it lowered his cap charge that year in the process, and on the back end, it raised his cap charges in future years because that money is treated like a signing bonus and spread out for, you know, amortization purposes when it comes to the salary cap. So you cannot look at the fact that you know, he's costing the Steelers X amount against the cap and hold that against him because he's, I mean, as you already said, he's making $5 million, if you know, $5 million this year. That's where he needs to be judged at, and that's where all mm-hmm. players, if you're going to get an equal you know, an equal playing field for these guys to be on, then that, you know, that needs to be the case. You need to deal with base salaries. Now, obviously, you can deal with you can add roster bonuses perhaps on there as well too, especially if they're not, you know, you know, paid out like a signing bonus. I mean, you have a few people this year. I think DeCastro and or Pouncey, I think, and Cameron Hayward all had roster bonuses this year that, you know, didn't get turned into signing bonuses, and that in essence is money that they're set to earn this year. Now you can use those, but you know, don't you dare use overall cap numbers when talking about these, you know, trying to line up players for being the, you know, the most overpaid or underpaid or this, that, and the other. And, boy, I mean, Mike Mitchell, we can go on and on. We've had this discussion several times of why, you know, why we think he, you know, he's a good fit and why we think he's probably an underrated player in the mind of most fans. But, yeah, I mean, just there's so many places to go with I think Stephen Ruiz is the one who wrote it for mm-hmm. the win for USA Today. And just the fact that he used cap numbers right off the bat really discredits him, you know, in mm-hmm. my opinion.
Right. If you look at in terms of actual, you know, base salary, like you said, Mitchell's owed $5 million this year. That's 23rd among all safeties in the league, behind guys like Barry Church. So I think if anything, there's good value being made with Mike Mitchell.
Yeah, 23rd out of, you know, obviously there's, you know, 2 times 32, 64 safeties across the league. But, you know, being in the middle of the pack there for what you get with him versus his pay-wise, yeah, he's not overpaid. And that just horrible when people don't research things like this, especially for a big paper, you know, such as or a notable company such as USA Today Sports. So enough beating that one down. What else do we have?
Yeah, well, I think we're going to get into running back today when we go through our position group, but a former Steelers running back had some comments about Martavis Bryant you wrote about yesterday, right, Dave?
Yeah, D'Angelo Williams, and this all stems back to his interview earlier or middle of last week, I think, with Adam Schefter on his podcast. You know, Williams obviously talked about wrestling, you know, talked about running backs being underpaid, you know, bunch of various different topics, but when, you know, he was asked, you know, kind of point blank about Steelers players and who he thinks doesn't get enough, you know, credit on the team, and you know, he was point blank in saying that it was Martavis Bryant. Now, D'Angelo obviously in his two seasons there only played, you know, only got to see Martavis play for one of those seasons, and even the one season that Martavis played, you know, you have a little bit of in trouble with the league there at the start of the season. But you know, here's what Williams said. Martavis Bryant, when asked which Steelers player is better than most people realize, "I've never seen anybody with his height do the things that he's done that I've seen him do. Like you see Megatron, and you're like, that is insane. Like, I'm not sure how fast Megatron was, but I'm almost sure Megatron wasn't a 4.25 speed player." And Williams continued on talking about you know, how he believes Martavis Bryant will indeed stay clean. And, you know, he pretty much bases that on the fact that at least Martavis Bryant made it through the time away from the team, and how he thinks that you know, that process of what the league does with suspended players and removing them completely away from their support system, being their teammates, is a bad idea. But in essence, he says, you know, with Martavis now back around the people, you know, his teammates, that's one reason to believe that he thinks he'll stay out of trouble moving forward. We'll see. Now, as far as the comparison to Megatron Calvin Johnson, hey, I mean, it would be nice. Now, in that post that I did write that up on, I looked at the first 21 games that Martavis Bryant and Calvin Johnson, regular season games, have both played. And, yeah, Martavis Bryant had a better start. He caught 76. He caught three more balls than Calvin Johnson. What is it? Something like 27 more yards receiving, right around in there. Yeah, he had a higher yards per reception. Or no, he had a just lower, barely a lower yards per reception number, but he did have six more touchdowns than Calvin Johnson. He had a higher reception rate by about almost 3%. Now, that was only through 21 games, obviously not through even two full seasons. So, and we all know what Calvin Johnson went on to do throughout his career. He had a few monster seasons in there as well. But, you know, I think if you stack Martavis Bryant in his first 21 games up to several wide receivers in their first 21 games, going back, let's say, you know, 10, 15 years, it's going to be okay. Now, what's really going to count now is what happens moving forward, you know, with the Steelers, and obviously over the course of the next two seasons here. And there's reason to be excited, but, you know, let's hold off right now before we put Martavis Bryant in the Hall of Fame. But I would like to say, you know, that if there was there's not a player in the league right now, I don't think, that's better suited to be a strong candidate for the NFL's Comeback Player of the Year award.
I agree, and I think in terms of just physical talent, you know, Bryant is up there with anybody else in the league. You know, Odell Beckham Jr., Julio Jones, AB, I mean, just straight talent, he's there. And, you know, that what he's done in the past is evidently without much training and effort during the offseason and at a lighter weight. So, you know, with him focused and getting his weight up, as we've talked about before, to 230 pounds, if he has maintained that speed, and I imagine that he has, he will be Megatron-like, and although I think D will need to know for the record, Calvin Johnson was close to a 4.25 kind of guy, too. His speed was ridiculous. So, yeah, we know the sky's the limit for Martavis Bryant if he is able to keep his, you know, head on clean. That's just the ultimate question, but, you know, there's no doubt about it that he has all the potential in the world.
Do you think, I think I know the answer to this question, but I'll ask you anyway, but, you know, do you think some of these athletes coming out of college and getting into the NFL and have some initial success, do you think that they just think that, hey, that's the way it is, I can roll out of bed, catch eight balls for 110 yards and two touchdowns, and I'm just that much more superior, that, mm-hmm. you know, that I kind of coast and I kind of take these things for granted? Do you think that could have been the case with a player such as Martavis Bryant? And I mean, look, I mean, I'm not just singling him out. I mean, you can go back through, you know, you can name off probably 100 players, you know, mm-hmm. Plaxico Burress, his first couple of years in the league. You know, do you think it's possible that, you know, I don't know because I've never been great at one thing, you know, mm-hmm. but is it possible that a lot of these players just take some of their athletic ability for granted and just kind of coast, if you will, until, you know, they get a harsh reality?
Sure. Oh, I'm sure you'd have hundreds of stories of guys like that, whether people that made it to the NFL or guys that, you know, only made it to college and ran into that problem. You know, Martavis Bryant, for most of his, you know, football life, has been the best athlete, the best player on the field. And so it's easy to get complacent and content with that because, you know, your athleticism is always going to win out. But when you get to the NFL, you're on a much more level playing field. You're playing against the best of the best, of course. And like you said, you get that harsh reality. You know, it's like that for even smaller things like conditioning, where, you know, Tomlin always talks about rookies not knowing how to be in football shape. And then you get to the NFL and you find out what, you know, football shape is. So, sure, I have no doubt that that's been part of the issue. Bryant not training and really working out during the offseason, I think, is proof of that. But we've seen that with so many other athletes throughout, any sport, but football in general. You look at Jamarcus Russell, a guy that had a ton of talent but didn't have any good practice habits and zero work ethic that had him fall out of the league. So this is a chance for Bryant to turn things around. A lot of those players don't get that chance, or they don't realize it until it's too late when they're washed up and their football career is close to over or over. Well, Bryant has a second chance here, and at least right now on the surface level, he seems to be taking advantage of it.
You know, how good can this guy be? I mean, we saw Randy Moss. He was the kind of guy that along the same lines as maybe Martavis early in his career. Of course, he didn't get in trouble. I think Randy Moss, obviously, I don't even think he missed a game until like his eighth, ninth, tenth season or so, something like that. You're talking about Randy Moss as a guy, I think, within his first 4 years or so, kind of averaged right around 70, 75, maybe a little bit more than that, catches, had 1,200, 1,300 yards, even more in each of those seasons. We don't expect Martavis, I don't think, to kind of put up those kind of numbers. Those are extremely tough numbers, especially when you have someone on the other side. Now, Randy Moss obviously had Chris Carter on the other side during his career as well, and Martavis has Antonio Bryan on the other side of his, but I mean, it's realistic, though, 70 to 75 catches a season and 1,100, 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns a season. That's realistic for Martavis Bryant, at least in the next two seasons to close out a Steelers career, right?
Maybe a little higher than what I would go with, but, it's certainly not without – it's certainly within the realm of possibility. I was going to actually mention his name, and then you did, Dave. I think Brian's story could be and hopefully ends up being a little similar to Chris Carter. Because remember, Carter had – I forget his whole story, but he got cut in Philadelphia because he was just doing all the wrong things, and it took him a while to get that wake-up call, and then he ended up having, obviously, a prolific career. So – maybe Bryant can follow in those footsteps and be more Chris Carter than Randy Moss. I don't know about the specific numbers. That's going to just depend on a lot of variables. And we know, like you said, because of the weapons in the Steelers offense, that Bryant's numbers are going to be capped. He's not going to put up 100 catches because there's just too many other weapons on this team. But, as I said, when we started first talking about this a couple minutes ago, Dave, the sky's the limit for him in terms of talent. I mean, he can be a Randy Moss type of guy. I know that's really high praise to give, but we know talent-wise, I mean, it's absurd what he's able to do and the flashes that he showed. You think about the Cardinals game 2 years ago where he just ran away from everybody, including Patrick Peterson. That's in a nutshell the rare talent that Bryant has. He's a special talent. There's no question about that. It's just about, realizing that talent, and hopefully he has, and doing the right things off the field that will let him maximize that talent.
Yeah, and we see a guy like Antonio Brown, really hone his skills and continues to be one of the hardest working players off the field in the league. And if Martavis can really dedicate himself, especially becoming, I obviously think Martavis is more than just a one trick pony right now. But I mean, he's still got, as I said in that show the other day, he's still got a lot more to prove in kind of the intermediate route portion of his game. I like to see him catch a few more 8 and 10 yard passes and then stack six yards of yak or more on top of it with him, because I mean, let's face it, if you look back at Martavis Bryant's brief career, I think he does have something like an average of close to 7 yards per yak, and that's very strong. Mm-hmm. If you can get a player that can get you, 15 yards or more every play, you're going to win a lot of damn ball games that way. Especially with what you have on the other side with Antonio Brown. Now, we've talked about this kind of recently with him, though. Personally, I think he's two and gone out of Pittsburgh, because I just think he's going to be such a good wide receiver over the course of the next 2 years that the Steelers just, you can't, as the old adage goes, you can't pay everybody. Are we destined to see Martavis Bryant have two great years and then us watch him fly away into the sunset and finish his career elsewhere?
Well, you know, you and I differ on this a little bit. I'm not confident that he's going to return, but I think it's more likely than what you believe, where either, you know, his market value might be down a bit because the, you know, off the field concerns, though if he's clean the next 2 years, that'll hopefully alleviate that. But, you know, could Bryant take a little bit less to stick around in Pittsburgh, the team that gave him a second chance, the place that he knows? I think it's possible.
I ain't taking less for nobody. I don't care. Yeah, it all sounds good in theory. Oh, you have a great chance to win a Super Bowl. Oh, you have a great chance to play with this quarterback, play with that quarterback. Oh, the Steelers stuck through it with me while I was doing, you know, while I got myself suspended. Show me the money.
All right, there, Jerry Maguire. I mean, it's not that he's going to take nothing, but could he, you know, if push comes to shove, you know, could that make the decision a lot tougher? I think it could. And I would expect the Steelers to pay a good amount of money. I don't know the number 2 years from now. Who knows what the baseline for receivers are going to be. But, you know, the Steelers will be able to make it work before. And let's just say, hypothetically, that there is no Ben Roethlisberger in the picture. Well, that's going to free up a lot of money to just go sign other people.
Well, obviously, if Ben's not there, that changes the dynamic a little bit. But even so, you would think that there's going to be some dead money associated with that year anyway. You know, that'll be tough to overcome as part of the scenario. But I've said it quite a bit, especially since he was suspended a second time here. I just can't foresee Martavis Bryant being in a Steeler uniform past his current contract ending. And you know, we'll see there. But you know, back to D'Angelo. I thought D'Angelo's always an intriguing guy to hear talk, and always makes good points and all when it comes to, you know, league stuff and all. So it was good to hear him praise Martavis Bryant. I bet Martavis Bryant, somehow I'm sure that will circulate back to him and make him feel good as well.
Yeah, hopefully. I think Bryant on Snapchat last night was sitting in a Porsche or a Ferrari. So I think either way, he's doing all right.
Yeah, I would think so. Okay, what else do we have to fill some time here before we talk about position groups? Anything?
Anything else on the camp previews that you did? You've been doing a lot of them the last couple of days. Anything that caught your eye when you were going through it all?
Why don't we go ahead and have our discussion right now about Ross Cockrell? We kind of ended the other show. Now, I don't think I've previewed Ross Cockrell just yet, though. But, I said this on Twitter earlier in the week as well, too. I've defended Ross Cockrell a ton over the course of the last, I don't know, two seasons or whatnot. But I still don't think... because of that, it still doesn't mean that I think he's going to be a Steeler past the 2017 season. And, you know, that was what I was trying to say the other day. I just don't think he's going to be a Steeler past 2017.
But right. And I you have defended him, and I think you like Ross Cockrell. But my question is, why exactly don't you think he's going to be here? Is it a money thing? Is it a talent thing? A scheme thing? What makes you say that?
I think it's just a whole opportunity money type thing. I mean, he obviously got a restricted tender this year, and even though some people thought that it was quite a gamble for the Steelers only do an original round level, as soon as they put that tender on him, I had no doubt that another team was not going to sign him to an offer sheet, even though they would have only had to, I say only, I mean, a fourth round draft pick still has some value to it, because those players, nine times out of ten, probably may end up making your roster as rookies. So, it's just not, oh yeah, it's only a fourth round draft pick there. But, I mean, the guy obviously has played well during his short time and opportunity with the Steelers, but, you know, I don't think we've seen him in enough situations either where other teams around the league are going to be falling all over themselves. Now, if he has another decent season in 2017, which, I mean, let's face it, he's going to start the season at least on the outside. How long he holds that job is entirely up to him, I would think, at this point. And if he has another season similar to what he had last season, which probably isn't totally out of the question, you obviously would like to see him have more turnovers or more splash plays kind of situation there. But, I mean, he would be silly not to allow himself to hit unrestricted free agency, and then at that point it becomes a situation where he might I think he's going to end up elsewhere.
Well, I think we say that about a lot of guys that we think are going to test the market, and sometimes they don't end up doing so, and they end up coming back to Pittsburgh before that chance happens. I mean,
But how many times does that actually happen? I mean, the Ramon Fosters, Robert Goldens, you know, those type of situations, sure. But I mean, you don't. I'm not ready to put Ross Cockrell in the Ramon Foster, William Gay category just yet.
Well, we know that Cockrell's market after this year is not going to be super hot. He's not going to be a top two or three corner probably in free agency, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's going to be a middle of the road, but he's still going to be if he has a season similar to what he had last year, probably, what, a $3 million player? A season?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we're not talking big money here. So, one, I think it's affordable for the Steelers to bring him back. And, two, I think that it's not like he's missing a big payday if he just re-signs with Pittsburgh. I mean, he knows where his market value is going to be. And even before free agency starts, these guys get an idea of what their market is. You think of Landry Jones, he talked about, even before free agency really started, he had an idea of what his market was, and it wasn't great, so he just came back to Pittsburgh. I think Cockrell, is going to have a similar situation. And just in general, for any player, they know what their market is before free agency actually starts.
Okay, so what do you expect to happen this season with Ross Cockrell?
I think he'll have a better year. I think this is a guy that's actually, really entering the prime of his career, has now total comfort in the defense. There's a more veteran group around him where you have Sean Davis and Artie Burns in their second years, and now Cockrell's a guy that probably doesn't have to be babysat at all, and he can, start working with the younger guys and be a leader in that regard. I think the more, some more man coverage concepts might help him, because I think he's a pretty good man cover corner, the best man cover corner the team had last year. I agree that he has to produce some more splash plays. He's sorely lacking in interceptions. I get that's not to say all end all, and if you're not getting targeted as often, teams picked on Artie Burns last year, you're going to have less chances, but Cockrell still got to come up with a couple big plays. I think he was a more physical and better tackler last year. It's never going to be great, but I think it's going to be good enough, and I think that's kind of where he was at last year compared to 2 years ago. So I think he'll have a good season. I think it'll warrant the team wanting to bring him back.
So in other words, you think he holds off the Cameron Suttons and all like that?
As we sit here today, I believe, yeah, he will. I mean, we haven't seen Sutton play a snap yet, so it's obviously difficult to know exactly, what the team has in him right now. But I'd be pretty surprised to see Cockrell get benched.
All right. Gay, for all practical purposes, even though Gay has lost, Gay isn't the same player he was, say, 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, at that 32 or whatever he is, I mean, that stuff kind of happens to a player. But even so, when you go back and look at it, Gay's entire body of work from last season, it was not awful. So in other words, I guess what I'm getting at is how long, and assuming health holds up, how long will the Steelers go with Burns, Gay, and Cockrell?
Well, we know this is pretty close to Gay's last year, so you could definitely see a move on after this year. And, I've been saying for a while that, I think Cam Sutton could be the future in the slot, so maybe that's the plan there. Cockrell's going to get better. He's going to keep playing well, and I still struggle to know exactly what your issue with him coming back is.
Is Cockrell going to – if you pay Cockrell after the 2017 season, is it because he's your starter or because he's your depth guy?
Because he's your starter.
So you see Cockrell starting past 2017 for the Steelers?
If he has the season, I think he will, where he continues to get better. Not in a huge way, but in a noticeable way. Yeah, I think he could be.
Wow. I don't. I just.
Well, who are you going to go with your left corner next year?
Then? I think there's actually a chance. Look, I mean, what did he play at Tennessee mostly? You know,
well, he played on the outside mostly, but he played in the slot too. The guy can play all over.
Sure, sure. And a lot of people are hoping that he gets some slot work this year. But, you know, as we saw during, not that OTAs are the end all do all, it doesn't sound like he got a lot of work in the slot. Mm-hmm. So, sure. Is that going to continue on through training camp? You know, we'll see. But, judging, right now, there's not as much hope for Sutton playing in the slot as I think a lot of us maybe had on draft day.
Sure. I don't think he'll do a lot this year. I think in camp is going to be on the outside because the mantra is play at one position and let him focus there. But that doesn't mean next year that he can't move to the slot next year. He's got a high IQ. He'll be comfortable in the system, know the defense. I think that transition can be made pretty easily. So do you think after this year, if it's you, that Cockrell and Gay are going to be gone?
I think there's a good possibility, yes.
Man, that's rebuilding a lot. So Sutton's your left corner next year. Who's your slot guy?
Might have to. Well, I mean, look, you have Sensabaugh, right? I mean,
another year older. Sensabaugh slot. That's not his best spot. He's an outside guy, more or less. That's dicey.
Yeah, I mean, you're gonna have to draft some, obviously. Again.
I like my idea of Cockrell, Burns, and Sutton. You know, Sutton in the slot. Then I think you are your idea of Burns, Sutton, and something else in the slot.
And look, I mean, we still have off season to go here, and you know the thing with that, and even though I would be surprised if it happened, it's not unheard of for a guy to get a restricted tender and then. Before the season starts, he gets his contract extended. So, you know, we don't know what's going through Cockrell's head and the Steelers' head right now. I mean, obviously, the Steelers want to get something first and foremost worked out with Le'Veon Bell and then Stephon Tuitt and then Alejandro Villanueva and those kind of things. So, you know, is there a possibility that we see a guy like Cockrell extended, later on in the offseason? You know, we'll see. I mean, it sounds mm-hmm. like to me you would jump at the opportunity if you could. Let's say $2 million was the number. You know, average yearly value. He's been making what 1.7 something now as part of the restricted tender. So it sounds to me that you would jump on a $2 million per year salary to re-up Cockrell, say for 2 more years.
I'm doing cartwheels to Omar Khan's office and saying, let's get this deal done if I can get it for $2 million. Yeah, I mean, if you could get it done super cheap, I would love to do an extension. I don't think it's going to happen this year because there's so many other fires to put out with Bell and Tuitt that I think you also want to wait and see with Cockrell and just see what happens this year. But if you could get an extension for dirt cheap, then I'm all over that.
And then, of course, Cockrell, too, you know, he runs the risk of leaving some money on the table. You know,
right. He probably wants players like to bet on themselves. I think he wants to see what he can do this year.
You know, and we could be talking about a guy that, you know, I think $3 to $4 million a year if he plays all 16 games and has, you know, 2-3 interceptions and I don't know what 14-15 passes defense, something along those lines. Here's the thing that bothers me too, maybe about Ross Cockrell, is if he does end up being a depth guy, do you really want him out there on special teams?
Probably not, but I don't really envision him as a depth guy though. So I don't think that's how the team is going to look at him. And they're certainly not going to pay $3 to $4 million if they look at him as a strict backup guy.
All right, let's ask our listeners what they think. Okay. The terrible podcast at gmail.com. Will Ross Cockrell be on the Steelers in 2018? Give us your thoughts on that, or tweet it to us, or however you want to.
Yeah, put up one of your poll questions on that.
All right, I think I did. Okay, no, I didn't on him. I think I asked that in the Friday Five. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about big special teams shoes to fill? And, you know, we talk about this player going from reserve to starter, this, that, and the other. I think one of the topics we haven't maybe talked enough about since Lawrence Timmons signed with Miami, and since all this stuff with Vince Williams. I know you and I have had some debates about, you know, what we think, you know, maybe Vince Williams can be as a starter with the Steelers and all. But here's something that really hasn't been talked about a lot. Who's going to replace all those lost special team snaps of Vince Williams?
That is a great point, Dave, and I agree. Not enough people talk about that. I really think the guy that might end up filling that role is James Conner. You know, he's got that same attitude or that bowling ball mentality that could go down and crack some skulls. And so I don't know how he's going to do. I know Kevin Colbert's excited about Conner on special teams, and I think that he might be a guy you can look towards to replace Vince. But it's a huge question and one that no one is talking about.
Okay, I mean, I'll give you the potential Conner maybe being the guy, but there's no way you're going to get the kind of he's not Vince Williams.
Well, who is? You know, find me that there's no other Vince Williams on this roster right now.
Right. I mean, some, you know, you have to have some of those bolts up there loose to be a great special teams player. And lucky for us, not all of Vince Williams' bolts are tightened down all the way. In fact, most of them aren't. And I think that's
he didn't come with bolts.
Right.
He wasn't born with bolts.
I mean, that we've seen it time and time again. I mean, since his rookie season. In fact, you know, that this guy is a special teams player. I think Tyler Matakavich, I think even though his bolts are tighter, you know, he just knows that that's the type he's got to do that kind of stuff in order to stick around. Same with LJ Fort, you know, that kind of mentality. And hopefully, you know, Keon Adams isn't taking anything for granted, because, you know, I think he's going to have to be a good special teams player in order to make it. But, I mean, in all reality, though, you're not going to throw Vince Williams back out there on special teams right now, right?
Yeah, I think it's really tough to justify that with him being on defense. So, I mean, as much as you would like to have him out there, I just don't think that you can, like you said, you can justify that and you're going to wear him out. So you got to look elsewhere. And, yeah, Matakavich is going to be there and play well, but, you know, he's not taking Vince's spot because he was already on special teams. He's playing a different spot than Vince Williams, or if anything, they move Matakavich's spot, now you got to fill where Matakavich has been playing. You get the point. So you got to have some new face in there, maybe Fort, because he didn't get a lot of burn last year. But, you know, maybe one of these undrafted kids, Keith Kelsey, Kalambos. But I go back to Conner too, you know, similar body type, a big guy, you know, that can hit. You know, Conner obviously has played special teams, or at least played, you know, defense in high school, a little bit in college as well, and that'll translate to a special teams kind of role.
Do you know who led the team in special team snaps last year?
In snaps?
Or can you name the top three players in special team snaps last year?
I don't know, maybe Vince Williams, Medkevich, and who would be the third guy? Dangerfield, maybe.
Let's see. Chickalo. Matakavich. Toussaint.
Oh, wow.
Those were your top three. And then Jordan Dangerfield fourth. Jordan had to miss. Didn't he? What was the situation with Dangerfield that he didn't dress? He didn't dress for a couple games, right? Dangerfield.
Really?
What was?
I don't remember.
Oh, he had a hamstring or something, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah, okay. Seemed like he missed a game with a hamstring, or something like that. I'll have to double check that. But he only played in 14 games. If not, Dangerfield would have probably been right up there with the most snaps. But
Toussaint was really third.
Toussaint, 248 special team snaps, 55.7%.
Wow. All right. Well, that's not going to happen again.
Now, Vince Williams, obviously, due to him, I think, probably starting a couple of games in there, had his totals down as well, too. Now, he still was just short of those other guys. He played 223 snaps, right at almost 50% total snaps there. So, I guess what I'm getting at is, look, We expect Anthony Ciccolo to continue on special teams. We expect Tyler Matakavich to be part of special teams. I think there's a very good chance, even though I included him on the toughest of the returning players from 2016 that ended the season on the roster. I included him on that list of toughest path players at the end, Jordan Dangerfield. I think Dangerfield probably makes it back, especially because he is such a decent special teams player. But boy, Vince Williams, you've got to replace 223 snaps there. And probably theoretically maybe a handful more than that. And if you assume that LJ Fort was already part of that team last year, here's the thing. You scroll down and you see a guy like Arthur Motes had 70 special team snaps last year. Arthur Motes is not the answer to filling the Vince Williams lost special team snaps.
Yep, shoes. Definitely.
So who is, yo? I mean, you think it's Connor then, huh? I mean, but what if Connor's not there? If Connor's there, who fills Toussaint's shoes? Not that it's big shoes to fill, but mm-hmm. you see what I'm getting at, the trickle down effect here?
Oh, sure. I don't know. You know, they could be. I have to look at exactly where everyone was lining up. You know, I look at the body type, though, instead of exactly, you know, the position. You know, Connor and Williams have similar body types. Connor isn't as similar to Toussaint. So, you know, Vince Williams was playing like R1 last year, where he's right next to the kicker, one of those interior guys where, you know, the big thumpers are trying to kind of be the quote unquote wedge busters, even though that doesn't really exist anymore. Toussaint, I think, was playing a little more to the outside. So that could be filled by maybe an LJ Ford, maybe a safety if a Damian Stafford makes his team or something like that. So, you know, I'd have to really kind of dig into it. Now you make me want to go through it all and try to chart it up. But
and I think it's good that we talk about this because we kind of gloss over it quite a bit. We know the importance Danny Smith has with building this roster in the final two players, but it's a big aspect that a lot of people just think that you get your best offensive and defensive players on the 53-man roster, but it's not always the case because you've got mm-hmm. to have these guys, you know, per se, that don't have the bolts tightened down all the way because, I mean, you just can't throw anybody out there to play special teams.
Exactly, and it has to fit, too. You know, you can't have five receivers on the punt coverage unit. You know, you got to have some big guys, the linebackers.
Exactly. You can't have 12 outside linebackers, kind of things because, now not everybody's going to be a core player, but I mean, you see these offensive line, I mean, these linebackers, inside and outside guys actually play on the offensive line on the punt team, you know? Mm-hmm.
You can't have your R5 on kick coverage be an outside linebacker. It's got to be a receiver or corner, you know, for safety.
Exactly. And as you mentioned, it is kind of a puzzle that you need to put together because you need X amount of, not only for a depth chart perspective at a defensive or offensive position, but you need guys that can play certain roles. You need X amount of gunners and things like that. So it is an interesting part of the roster construction, and that's kind of why I wanted to go at it because of the fact that Vince Williams is going to start. I mean, there's a now he did play some special teams against the Chiefs last year, even though he started. And boy, what a heck of a game! I went back and watched. I wrote about him yesterday, and because of that, I put on a lot of that Chiefs game because he had what was it, 16 total tackles in there. One of them was on special teams on him going after who was it, Tyreek Hill on the kickoff providing a wallop there. But, that you want to talk about tough shoes to fill. And, mm-hmm. I hate to keep going back to Arthur Motes and all. If Arthur Motes is not going to give you special team snaps, then why do you need him?
Right. Yeah, that's why Keon Adams could take his spot.
You know, I love Arthur Motes, the player, the person, everything. But I mean, there's been a decline, and even when some of those injuries hit last year, we saw kind of decline. I mean, he almost had to play special teams by default, you know, situation once Chickalo hurt his ankle and all like that. And,
Let me ask you this, Dave. Bigger shoes to fill, Vince Williams filling in for Lawrence Timmons or whoever fills in for Vince Williams on special teams?
I think it's the latter. I mean, you know, I mean, look, as much as I like Lawrence Timmons, I mean, it's obvious that, you know, he was who he was and he has been who he has been for several years. And, you know, even though I worry about Vince Williams overall, I think the gap is obviously closer there than maybe you saying that, oh, we'll just throw James Conner out there to fill in Vince Williams' special teams. I think the gap is a lot further in special teams player than it is inside linebacker play.
Do you agree, though, that Conner could fill that role? Because I think they're similar guys. I'm not saying he can do it as well, but I think he's going to get a shot at it.
No, I think it's – I mean, it's a perfect name to throw out there, yes. I just – I mean, I'm trying to envision myself cutting up James Conner special teams clips, you know.
Right. But Colbert was so excited about him. That surprised me, but I get it now.
Yeah, but, I mean, I haven't seen – you know, you've got the bathwater all ready for me, but I haven't seen the baby just yet, you know.
Okay, I'm not totally sure what that means, but I'll roll with it.
I don't either, but it sure sounds good, you know. but, yeah, I mean, you get what I mean. You can praise a lot of these guys up in certain areas, but, I mean, he hasn't done it before. I mean, it's not something tangible that we can really go and see with James Conner. You know,
A lot of these college guys don't have that because they didn't do it in college.
Right. In fact, you know, I asked Keon. I mean, Keon Adams is another guy that it's fun to think about Keon Adams being a special teams warrior, but have we really seen it?
Right. I mean, was Chickalo a 3-4 end in Al Golden's Miami defense running down kicks? I don't think he was. He was 270 pounds. I don't think he did it. So.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's another good point. Now, let's admit it, though. Anthony Chickalo became a better special teams player than both you and I ever imagined he would.
Oh, sure. No doubt about it. But my point is, you know, yeah, we haven't seen James Conner run on special teams, but we don't see a lot of these college draft picks do it because they didn't do it at all. They did it freshman year or something like that. So, you know, it's about a projection based off of traits. And I think Conner has the traits, the size, the physicality, the pass rushing background to make himself an effective special teamer.
And it'll be interesting. Boy, push comes. I mean, we've seen players, a lot of, you know, look, Darius Haber-Bey, a guy that had to extend his career by doing it. Sammy Coates surprised me, at least, with you know, what he was able to do last year on special teams. I mean, Roosevelt Nix, for all that he was coming in, I mean, do we really expect him to be the kind of special teams guy that he's become? So yeah, you got a lot of instances on this team, you know, where you look at it. I mean, Jordan Dangerfield, I think it was kind of evident right from the get go because we had enough tape on him delivering a few waltz where we could say, okay, this guy probably, you know, projects as a good special teamer. So yeah, you know, look, I'm not going to say that James Conner can't be that guy to give you those snaps, but I want to see it. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Sure, definitely agreed.
Speaking of James Conner and Toussaint, and, you know, talking about all these guys, let's go ahead and talk about the running back position as part of our preview today. I forget which, but I think maybe we talked about maybe doing quarterbacks or what have you. But let's talk about running backs right now. Now, Le'Veon Bell, there's no real reason for us to really go in depth with him. The biggest knock on him, which is actually, I mean, probably a positive, is sometimes he doesn't hit the hole, you know, as fast as you'd like him to. He sits there and dances and very deliberate behind the line of scrimmage. But, boy, when you look at the percent of successful plays of his over the course of his career, if you look at, you know, yards after contact, how few times he gets tackled for losses and stuff like that. I mean, to me, the only real thing that I would like to see more out of Le'Veon Bell, and I could probably, if he continues being the same player that he's been and producing the same levels that he's been the last few years, I can live without. Is you just like to see him break a few more, you know, explosive plays, I think. And and to me, that's really the only knock on Le'Veon Bell right now.
Right. No, I hear you. Two quick questions for you, Dave. I'll ask them one at a time here. Do you believe Le'Veon Bell is the best back in the league, yes or no?
I mean, top to bottom, blocking.
Yeah,
I mean,
everything.
Whole package. Receiving and running and... Yeah, I do. I mean, David Johnson's a heck. I mean, it's right there with him. I think I'd have to go back and maybe look at David Johnson's pass protection, you know, and stuff that goes along with it. But I mean, if Le'Veon Bell isn't, he's right there. I mean, and obviously everybody knows that. I mean, how many guys can you throw out there that can not lose yard, that won't lose yardage on plays, that will have a high rate of successful plays? Look, it's one thing to break off a 15-yard or 20-yard play on one play, but what are you, out of 20 plays, what are you doing on the other 19?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's so important, and even though yards per carry is a great, fun stat to look at, it doesn't tell the whole story because, okay, another thing, first and goal at the one. How many yards can a running back get?
Mm-hmm. Right. One. In Le'Veon Bell's case, though, sometimes 10 because he's running around so much.
Right. And you get that one yard. I mean, it goes into books as a carry for 1 yards, and there's no asterisk next to it. So, you know, when you that's just one of the several flaws with using yards per carry. That's why I always like to go back and do you know, successful play percentages. And I think it's very important to look at percentage of times tackled for losses as well, too. I think those are two key stats that just don't, you know, if you're up to me, players would, the NFL.com page with stats, it would be a mile long because you would have all these percentage runs, you know, successful runs. You'd have explosive plays. You would have percentage tackle for loss and stuff. And you know what? Why don't they? Because in such a fantasy world, I want as much info as possible, and why wouldn't the NFL have that kind of stuff for you at a click?
Well, I guess some people think it's too heavy. You know, some people like just the easier, digestible numbers. I know, Dave, if you were running the NFL, you would rename it the Talks League. that would be what you would call it. But no, we're
oh, no, right? Hey, don't for a day. As much as I love the Talks, I love pushing the agenda on the adjusted net yards per passing attempt a lot more than I do pushing the agenda on Talks. People get sick of me talking about the adjusted net yards. Stat as the season wears on, but
that didn't roll off the tongue as well for me, so I went Talks right. Instead. I'm in agreement. Bell best back in the league. I think Zeke is a better runner. Bell better complete back. Other question for you, real quick, Dave, because I know I've had a couple people following that have asked for this several times, and I think you kind of given the answer, but just to placate them one more time, just give me an overall structure of any Le'Veon Bell deal if it gets done the next week, the years and the total amount. I know that's not obviously the most important thing, but what is it, 4 years, $45 million? Like, give the listeners a general idea.
At least 5 years, maybe 6 years, okay. Because to stretch the signing bonus out, an average of anywhere between $10.5 million to $12.5 million is the average yearly value. You know, as far as guaranteed money, I mean, you know, if you go back, here's something I did this past week. You go back and look at the old Lamar Woodley contract after he signed a franchise tag. You know, that might be a great place to start when looking at structure and percentage of guaranteed money. So instead of like the $12 million signing bonus, I've thrown around $10 to $12 million. Maybe it's $15 to $16 million. Instead of first year money being, you know, $18 million, walk away from the walk away from 2017 with, maybe it's anywhere between $18 to $20 million. I don't think it's going to be much higher than that. But, I mean, look, I think it's 5 or 6 years in length, because you need it at least 5 years, because that's the maximum amount that you can extend out the signing bonus. Right. I mean, your signing bonus, as much as I would like to see them load up that front year money with as low a signing bonus as possible and with as high as base salary as possible, it's just not the way the Steelers do deals. Okay, you know, they're not one to guarantee that money. Now, can they? We have seen them, and I think they did this with Lamar Woodley as well too. Is you can put that roster bonus still in there, which is almost virtually guaranteed on top of it. You know, so Woodley, I think got $13 million signing bonus. What was it? $1.1 million first year base salary, and man, I'm drawing a blank. I just pictured this in my head. $4 or $5 million roster bonus in first year. So, and that was that contract averaged, what was it, 10.25 or something like that. That Woodley received. I think that was a six. Was it a 5 or 6 year?
And it's 5 year deal.
I can't remember. I just looked at it just the other day. I looked at so many contracts during a damn day, though. They all run together. But look, anything under $12 million is a steal for the Steelers when it comes to average yearly value. That's why I think it's going to be somewhere between $10.5 to $12.5 million average yearly value. 5 to 6 years in length. And, you know, as far as walk away first year money, $18 to $20 million. You know, that would be my best guess on this. Now, back to the running backs that we haven't hit on yet. James Conner, I mean, look, I mean, if anybody saw his Pitt career, you kind of know what you're getting there. You want to talk about a big guy that can produce explosive runs? He did it. Successful play rate. I don't have that off the top. You know, maybe that's something to look into. But look, we've seen numerous college running backs have high play success rates in college, but it doesn't amount to a hill of beans at the NFL level as well. So, you know, there's a lot to potentially be excited about with James Conner, but until we see him do it on the field. You know, a lot of speculation goes back to just really what his breakdowns were during college there. Now, Nile Davis, I don't want to use a cuss word here on the podcast, but I put it best after kind of going back some of his stuff this past week. Nile Davis better return the crap out of some kickoffs during the preseason.
That is not the word used on Twitter yesterday.
No. It was another four-letter word that began with S. But, I mean, there's not a lot to get excited about as far as Nile Davis, a running back, to me. Not a lot to get excited about at all. Matthew Marksi wrote several weeks ago, about his 250, I think he has 250 career carries, and his successful play percentage is well under 30%, well under 30%, and you know he played behind a decent, more than decent offensive line in Kansas City as well too. So I don't know. The further we get into this thing, is Nile Davis the next Kevin Barlow?
Yeah, no, I know you mentioned Barlow on Twitter, too. It could be. I think he was a niche signing. I don't think they're going to really expect a lot of him as a runner. Hopefully it doesn't come to that. So James Conner hopefully enters camp healthy after the hamstring injury and kind of hits the ground running. The big saving grace right now for Davis is, you know, if he's not returning kicks, who is? Sammy Coates, you know.
Yeah, that's a big question mark.
Right. It's not a lot of competition. There's not a lot of competition.
Right. And, well, you know, Cameron Sutton was more of a punt returner. So, you know, I don't, you know, maybe you take a look at Cameron Sutton back there, see if he can return some kickoffs. But, yeah.
Now, I do think Coates can push him. I wrote about this like a month ago, but that's like the only name you can really throw out there.
Yeah. And what's the ceiling of what, as far as what we would expect? From Coates, you know?
Right.
Fitzgerald Toussaint is a guy that we haven't really seen a lot of. You know, I thought outside of the fumble against Denver a couple years ago, I think Toussaint's playoff performances and carries have lent themselves to maybe perking up your ears a little bit. But, I mean, let's face it, his successful play rate isn't much better than that of Nile Davis. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about the special team snaps he gives you, but I don't think there's one play that sticks out in my head as far as Fitzgerald Toussaint and special teams play, especially last year. So, right. I mean, who do we got behind him?
Behind Toussaint, it's just a lot of the UDFA futures guys. There's Terrell Watson, who's got a good story and has a little NFL experience. You know, he's a bigger back. Steelers do like their bigger backs. Trey Williams was a futures guy. We got Brandon Brown Dukes on the roster for now. See how long that holds up for. Yeah, those guys are all outside looking in.
You know, if Nile Davis cannot be your kick returner, why not just re-sign D'Angelo Williams?
But not, he's not going to play on special teams, though, to go back to what you say.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, D'Angelo didn't play special teams any of his time in Pittsburgh, and he was the backup, so.
Well, in this scenario, will D will become the number two then and Carter the number three? Is that how you're stacking the deck?
I think, and then, you know, situationally, I think you could probably find a way to maybe to get Connor in. But I think for at least this year, I mean, look, we got a lot to find out about Connor still, right?
Sure.
I mean, it's not like he, you know, took part in a lot of the off-season programs. So we still have a lot to find out about James Connor before we go making him the number two back.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, and that could be a position they look to up making a move there if Davis falters and Connor struggles with injury or play or whatever. I don't know if I'd go back to D-Will, though. I really think that ship has sailed, and that was evident when the team let him go to go draft running back, to go draft a guy like James Connor. So I might look to bring in somebody that can be your return value with a little more out-of-the-backfield ability. I think of a Tavares Cadet from New Orleans or, you know, whoever else is going to be out there that helps me on special teams as a returner.
Who are you most excited to see of these also guys on at the running back position? Terrell Watson?
Yeah, I think Watson, just because I know about, you know, Brown Dukes and Williams I'm not super excited about, but Watson's a bigger guy. He's got some NFL experience, had a great career at Azusa Pacific. He got coached by, I think, Jackie Slater, the longtime Rams tackle, was the offensive line coach or running backs coach there or something. Christian Okoye, who, of course, is from the same college, just spoke highly of Watson. So, you know, I'm excited to watch him work.
Here's the bad thing about the running back position right now as it stands here today. We've seen it time and time again during training camps. A couple of these guys are going to cycle out of here so quick, unfortunately, you know, because the lines are so short already. I mean, how many guys they got under, you know, you got Bell, you got Brandon Brown. And look, I mean, Bell, are you even going to go full bore with him early in training camp, right?
Yeah. He's probably going to be limited. I think they have seven backs right now, including Bell, so six without.
Yeah, I mean, so you get a guy that comes up with a boo-boo on one day, that boo-boo might cost him, you know, might ship him out of town. So, I mean, you could have with these lines, what I'm getting at is don't get too comfortable with the Terrell Watsons and Trey Williams right now, because their biggest ability right now will be their availability moving through through training camp. Anything else you'd like to add about the running back group?
No, I think we hit it well. You know, we know the three, you know, Connor and Davis, they all control their own destiny. Connor is the backup running back. If he plays well, he's the backup to Bell. Davis, if he returns well, he's going to be the number three and the kick returner, and everyone else is working outside in. But, yeah, you're right. You're going to see turnover at this position. I remember, what was his name, Ross Schuerman from UMass a couple years ago. You know, he looked good for one practice, tore his Achilles, was done, bringing another guy. So you're going to see rotation there.
All right, we already ran long, so we'll end up with a few listener questions here that we reached out again. Xavier Goulden, does the team like Dirty Red as much as the fans do, or are there any certain guys you think they'd like to trade for at inside linebacker? Look, I don't know how much the team likes Dirty Red. I think Dirty Red might be a little bit overrated as far as a inside, quote unquote, linebacker goes, but on the flip side, he is a good special teams player. He proved his worth. I mean, they obviously like him. To what degree of that matching what the fans like? I think some of the fans have kind of maybe cooled a little bit, you know, as far as the hype on Dirty Red. But with that said, I don't think the Steelers are going to trade for an inside linebacker. No. At this point, I think they'll kind of roll with what they got. If they haven't gone out and looked at a Zach Orr by now, now they did, of course, bring in Dante Hightower during the offseason. But I think they like Dirty Red. I mean, there's no reason to think that they don't. And as far as kind of matching it to what the fan base, you got to admit, though, fans had Dirty Red in the Hall of Fame there, you know, I think this time last year. But Alex?
I think actually I think you're right. The fans might have cooled on him a little bit. I think the team is really high on him, higher than maybe some in the fan base, and evidenced by not bringing in the competition. Yes, they kind of flirted with Hightower, but you know that's gonna happen. I think they like Matakevich a lot, both as a special teamer, of course, but also the potential to play on defense should he have to. Obviously, it's Vince Williams' backup right now. So I think they're high on him. Do I see a trade happening? Only way I could is if it was player for player for an inside linebacker. But I think when you spend money on Keith Kelsey as one of your higher UDFAs and Matt Galambo, if you sign him at a rookie minicamp, it's probably not going to happen.
All right, one more from Stephen Carpenter on Twitter. Outside of AB, who is both a big play and clutch player in key situations? Who else on the roster takes second? Well, not going to be any of your tight ends.
I mean, Bell.
Bell. You
know, the Chargers game, 4th-and-1. 2 years ago, whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming you don't want me to name Ben Roethlisberger. So, Martavis Bryant, not maybe clutch enough yet in key situations.
Can James Harrison be a clutch guy? I mean, he makes plays on third down passing situations all the time.
I don't think that's where Stephen Carpenter's going with this. I think he's going with offensive players
just
here.
Offense.
I would say Le'Veon Bell, and hopefully we find out if a Martavis Bryant or if a Eli Rogers can be more clutch. I mean, Eli did have a high catch percentage last year, a nice average yards per reception and all, but I mean, do you view Eli Rogers as being a clutch in key situations right now? Probably not.
Yeah, not yet.
So I think Le'Veon Bell, if I'm not allowed to say Ben Roethlisberger, I think I'm Stephen. I'm taking Le'Veon Bell next, and that's a great question and probably a great way to close out this show as well too. Alex, I appreciate you sitting in for David Todd once again, folks. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow my co-host David Todd at David M Todd. Follow Alex Cazora at Alex_Cazora. You can email the show theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Find that donate button upper right navigational bar. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.